Blog Talk Radio. It's 3 o'clock on my time. It's a partly cloudy day, but the sun was out today. Nice day, nice weather. And, well, I'm going to be continuing with more on Indianapolis as we go to, Sensu Restaurant. An Asian fusion restaurant, and we're going to talk with the waitress there, Heather Shaw, who did a tasting for us. And we're also, we also are going to go to another restaurant called Meridian on Meridian, where we'll have Chef Dan Dunville. And owner Rick Lux will be also calling it to tell us about that restaurant and about some of his others. And then we're going to go to the Indianapolis Zoo, and finally a Segway tour through the state park with Bob Witt, and he'll tell us about the places that we visited in the park. So, here we are. So now, okay, Barbara, in case you're listening, it's going to be about food. So, I hope you ate. So, right now, without hesitation, not even going to do a commercial. We're going on the air right now with Heather Shaw. Heather, how are you?
I am fantastic. How are you today?
Oh, just great. I'm still drooling from looking at the menu here.
Yes, we have a fantastic menu.
All right. First we'll explain that. That you were waiting. You were the waitress at the table, and you just went ahead and said you asked if we wanted to do a tasting. There were four of us.
Yes.
And that you just, you know, were able to choose it yourself. But before we get to that, let's talk about the restaurant itself. So tell us a little about Sensu.
Okay. Well, at Sensu, our menu is designed, it's more geared towards sharing. It's more like a tapas-style dining. The objective is to let the guests come in and let's order for the guests is ultimately the major goal there. I do feel with Sensu, I think people feel our restaurant is intimidating, but that is essentially why we help guide our guests through the ordering process to ensure they do understand and receive the full Sensu experience, which is, I mean, it makes us so much more than just a sushi restaurant. We are a restaurant with many steak and seafood offerings and have a non-intimidating array of choices. Our new spin on the cuisine is that it is the best beef and the freshest seafood in town, prepared with varying spice and flavor profiles, and our atmosphere comes second to none.
Tell us about the atmosphere. It's not just like sitting down at a table. There seems to be more, and it's nightclub, and tell us all about that.
Well, it's essentially two floors. We have different levels in between. You could almost consider it four levels. We have the dining room, which is at the top floor. And we have a full bar and a sushi bar at the very top level. And then you step down to the next level, and then we have a private dining, and that is going to be called Vanity. And then you step to the next level, a little bit lower, and that is going to be called the Meridian. And then you go to the very bottom floor, and that is going to be the bar and the club. And then we have private rooms down there like Lavo and things like that. We do start gearing towards the nightclub about 10 o'clock, so the atmosphere starts changing. We start changing, slowly start changing the lighting. We start changing the music, the what is being shown on TV. Cause, you know, during like, dinner, we have, like, a just, like, scenery, like, a, you know, Belize and you know, just for, you know, different array of items. And then once we start moving into the nightclub atmosphere, we do have more of a, how do you want to say it? I would say you could see, like, people dancing on screens, you know, on the screens and like that. So it's a very nice atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, we were watching something on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
We were watching
mm-hmm.
this,
you were.
Like an aquarium kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we air different things like that throughout the night. And like I said, the closer it gets to the evening time, you know, like the nightclub time, that's when we start just swapping the atmosphere up and making it just a little more upbeat and, you know, a little bit more club friendly.
Yeah, so it's not just really gets to your senses. I mean, it's not just you're dealing with your eyes as well, just in terms of the atmosphere. As well, of course, the food, because the way the, you know, presentation of
Definitely.
The food itself too is another thing. And oh yeah, the location. Tell everybody where the exact location is.
We are located at 225 South Meridian Street. So we are right across the street from
Ginny the Omni Hotel.
Exactly. We're at essentially right at the old Union Station.
Uh-huh.
We're right beside it. We've got a perfect location, easy access, plenty of parking, very easy to get to.
Cool. That's really great. You know, it's interesting. From the outside, you really can't get a sense of the restaurant at all, like looking down the street and saying, oh, there's the restaurant. I wonder what that is. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
But it's not like a hideaway. It's just, you know, instead of fancy outside, it's fancy inside.
It is. It is
yeah.
beautiful inside. It really is.
I know. Sensational. And by the way, do you know what sensu means? Did they tell you? Or is that
sensu? It actually means, like, you see underneath our menu, it says indulge, ignite, and inspire. It means the sense. You know.
Oh, okay. That's like, I got that's what I thought it meant. All right.
Yes.
Okay. All right, everybody. Be prepared. Heather's now going to describe what we ate. Now, first of all, let me first say, tell us about how do you choose when you're doing a tasting, and how often do you wind up doing tastings rather than somebody saying, no, I'm going to order off the menu?
I usually have a 95% range of getting my guests to just let me order for them. I mean, it's a pretty good chance. I mean, unless it's usually one of the regulars that come in and they're like, hey, I'm in a hurry and it only wants this and this. But it's usually a regular customer. You know, a return VIP guest. But like I said, usually I order for them. So, and that is the best way to definitely get the full sensu experience, because people start just believing, hey, this is just a sushi restaurant. No, we're not. We are so much more. So much more.
Yeah, okay. So basically you just kind of ask if anybody's allergic to anything or doesn't like something.
Well, I start off at the table, and I go into a spill, and I say, you know, welcome to sensu, and I definitely want to know if you've been here before, if you haven't. I always love first-timers, and I let them know right off the bat, this is like no other restaurant you've ever been to in your entire life. You will have a blast here. And then I just go into the background about sensu, and I do tell them, sensu, you know, our menu is designed for sharing. It's kind of, and sometimes they look at you like, you know, intimidated. They don't understand what that means. And then you say, it's more like a tapas style. And they're like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, I'm with you now. And then I just started, and I tell them, traditionally, we start out with cold plates, we move forward to hot plates, and then we do save the sushi for last, because we give it something special, and it should be safe for the very end of the meal. And then I tell them, depending on how many's there, I tell them, well, I need to know if you have any allergies, we have any dislikes, we have any, you know, what, you know, tell me what you like. I want to hear about you. And then, you know, we'll talk about drinks, and they'll usually, that's where it usually starts off from. You know, if you're a wine drinker, if you're a sake drinker, if you drink dry, if you drink sweet, if you drink dessert wine. And that's usually, from that point, I automatically, in my head, I plan on a menu for that person. And as you know, as I did with you, you know, you were a sake connoisseur. So instantly, me and you together, we sit down and we decided what kind of sake you liked. You liked a drier, unfiltered sake. I let you try it. You were absolutely pleased with the sake. And from there, I just picked items that would be geared more towards you because they're either marinated in sake or they're fired with sake.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. I think I'm gonna have to go out and get some sake after talking. Well, as I had told you, I don't know if I told you, I had gone to this Geikakan. The plant is in California. That's where they're making it, and so I went out there, and I did a tasting there, and it's interesting. Getting something that's not imported, but the one actually what I chose wasn't from Geikakan, but it was the reason I had picked it. I just wanted to share it with my listeners that I chose that because I did a tasting some years ago with Rocky Aoki, who's the founder owner of Benihana's. And mm-hmm. I got to learn about sake that way. And one thing I recommend to everybody who's ever tried sake for the first time, don't have it warm.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And I, you know, and for the ladies especially, and we carry this, and I love this. This is hard to find. We carry a sparkling sake, you know, and most women that come in, they hear the word sake, and they're kind of intimidated right out of the gate. And I'm like, you know what? Try this. And I tell you what, 9 times out of 10, they love either the snow cream plum wine or the sparkling citrus sake
right.
that we carry. And they're like, wow, I didn't realize sake could be, you know, this smooth and, you know, not be so dry and rice tasting. So,
yeah, that's...
I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Okay. Now that I got drunk just talking about it...
I'll save you a glass.
Okay. Let's get into the food, because I want you to describe what we ate.
Okay.
And then, yeah. Go ahead.
Should I
pick them out, or you got the list with you?
I've got it. I've got it right here with me.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I started off with you guys, I can portion out anything. You know, if a guest comes in and they want a full order, by all means, I'd be more happy to serve them a full order. But I have that luxury of, you know, portioning out your meal to make sure you do try a wide array of different items.
Mm-hmm.
But I started off with a four-piece lobster tacos. And that's going to be our marinated lobster in our red gold tomato salsa, and it's going to have avocado in it, and it's going to have red onion, and it's going to have frisée between each one of them. And it's just finger food just to get you started, you know, just small amounts just to get you started. And I followed up next. I would usually do this later on, but you seem to be loving the sake so much. I thought, what the hey, you know, let's go
mm-hmm.
ahead and send her the beef teppanyaki right now. Let's go ahead and get it out of the way. And that, you know, the beef teppanyaki, it has the Kobe beef in it, and it is cooked in a ceramic dish, and it has, let's see here, it has a little bit of asparagus, it has the shiitake mushrooms in it, and it's fired right on top with a filtered sake, which is dry. And you did happen to love that one, by the way.
Mm.
I remember that. Then we followed up with we went back to a cold item. Like I said, I usually traditionally stay with cold, but with you, I just felt a little bit different, and I felt I had a little bit more playroom. So with you, I moved back and forth. So we followed up next with a spicy tuna poke, which is going to be like a Hawaiian appetizer, and I pieced it out. And I don't know if you remember or not, the lady that was with you, she wasn't too fond of raw seafood. So what I did was I served 4 pieces of the tuna poke, which has the chili peppers, the tuna, green onions, ginger, and soy on the crispy wonton. And I served her 1 pot sticker that came with a chili sesame glaze. And that's basically just it's like a pork belly that has carrots and cabbage. It's a dumpling that is steamed and seared, you know, just to, because I can accommodate all the way. You know, I threw that extra piece on just for her to try. If she could do it, she could. If not, I knew you had it covered, and you did. And then we went
she's the one who got the leftovers.
She did. I thought I was going to have to take the knives away when you hit the beef teppanyaki. I was like, wow, you were getting kind of vicious at the table over that one. So we followed up with the baked snow crab hand rolls, which are my personal favorites. They're 2 hand rolls, and we served 4 to the table because they are cooked, and she was able to eat those. But it's baked snow crab, spicy mayo, and a tempura crunch rolled in a sesame soy rice paper roll. So, and then we followed up with the sea bass, which is another one of my favorites. And the sea bass, it is just fantastic. Sea bass is a white fish, very mild in flavor, and that's the one that was cooked in the paper pouch and that I presented at the table, and I cut it open with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, it has your favorite in it. It has the sake braised mushrooms in it. So that was, you know, that's always fantastic. And then we moved forward, and we had the toast and jam. And there was 5 pieces of the shrimp toast. And it comes with a spicy tuna jam. It's kind of like a marmalade texture, but it has many, many different items in it. It's got ginger, cumin, cilantro, I mean, tuna, you name it, it's got it in it. And it's fantastic. But it's just a little, you know, appetizer to get you prepped for the next course. Then we went with the rock shrimp tempura. And the rock shrimp is actually, it's a deep water shrimp, and it is fried lightly with a tempura batter. It's served atop a bed of mixed greens drizzled with a spicy citrus sauce. It has a wonderful citrusy flavor. And then we saved the best for last. There's 2 sushi rolls, and you had the surf and turf roll, and that's got the shrimp tempura, avocado, cucumber. It's a maki roll topped with beef kitake and a soy balsamic glaze. And then my personal favorite, the Krusty Krab. And no, we weren't thinking about SpongeBob when we made that. It's got the spicy tuna crunch mix. It's crab and avocado on a full-size like nori sheet, and it's slightly tempura battered, fried to a light golden color with like a tiger sauce on it. And it is absolutely divine. And then
I might have continued to eat. But I said we had to go to a show. I think that was one of
you. Yes, you were in a hurry. Yes, you were.
Yeah. I have a problem. Food is a problem for me because that
food is never a problem.
I don't eat out of hunger. I eat when food is good, and it's like, and especially if I'm going to a Japanese restaurant, it's like I can another sushi roll. Yeah, I can eat another 5.
We have awesome food. We really do, right across the board.
It's not average.
Oh, I'm telling you, we do. We have great food there.
I found out you had emailed me about a cookie.
Oh yes, you left. You
know where
it
went.
It
probably went in the bag when that Melody and
yeah.
they took home with them.
I said, this is on Jeremiah. Jeremiah is the owner. I said, this is on Jeremiah. It is one of his personal favorites. It's a white macadamia nut cookie. It's half-baked, fresh out of the oven with a scoop of vanilla ice cream right on top. And it is simply to die for. And if you would have stayed around long enough, I bet I could have got one, at least one or two white Russians in you. So you would have been feeling really good by the time you left there to go to that meeting.
Well, we were going to, I think we were going to a show. We had to see 39 Steps.
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, that's what we were doing.
You're definitely going to have to come back in and let me know when you're coming in, and me and you's going to have to, you know, get a table together and sit, and we're going to have to try, you know, a whole different, you know, menu.
Oh,
I'll design another menu for us, and
well,
I tell you what, we'll do it on a night that Sin is presenting,
yeah,
like DJ Josh Madden or Asia Major with DJ Fashion.
I already got an invite from the Italian Heritage Society to come back, and they're going to cook dinner for me.
Oh, that's, I love Italian. I do.
Did you know that there's an Italian Heritage Society in Indianapolis?
No, I did not. Now you're educating me now.
Yeah, but I did the show I did last night because I did a gondola tour. So I'm going on a gondola. I got the Heritage Society, and then a woman who wrote a book on her Italian heritage, who's on the board. So that's what I had last night talking on the radio about. So we would, of course, we're talking about food again.
You know? Well, that's a good thing, though. That's a good thing.
Oh, it is.
Who doesn't love to eat? You know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, if you can get bored, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You can either, you know, some people eat to live, people live to eat. I'm the one that lives to eat, you know. But the problem is when I go to restaurants that where the food is so good, and then I'm going, do I really want to go out to another Japanese restaurant? You know, I mean, what if the food isn't as good as the one I had? What's the point?
I know. You made that comment. You said, how am I ever going to go to another restaurant? I told
you,
well, you'll have to come back, honey.
No, that's what I'll have to do. Come on back there. So how long have you been working at Senso?
We've been open for about, 2.5 months now.
That's it?
Yeah, we just opened just recently. We have very, very extensive training. So
I was going to ask you about the training. That's what I wanted you to know.
Very, very extensive training. We go through 12 days of training.
Who's the executive chef that I should thank?
Our executive chef, his name is Jake, and Chef Thomas, and they are the best. They also are the executives over at Moe's Steakhouse. So I don't know if you knew this, but our owner actually owns Moe's Steakhouse as well. But I am going to say this. I probably shouldn't, but our food is much better than Moe's. Sorry, Jeremiah. Much better. We use so much better beef.
Completely
the Kobe. Yeah. So, but we have very, very extensive training. I mean, it was a bear getting through it. It really was. When we drop everything at the table, we drop an item at the table, we have to be able to explain word for word what it is. And let's say you're like, hey, Heather, I need to know, like, what all's in this. I think I might have an allergy, you know. Any item that I drop at the table, by the time I leave that table, you are going to thoroughly understand what it is.
Yeah, and how it's cooked and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know, I really highly appreciate that, whether, you know, as a consumer or a journalist, when I go to a restaurant and the wait staff can really give me a description, because it's not the most of them say, you know, they just exactly what the menu says, you know, and
exactly.
can say nothing more, you know. And
well, it's
I
more comfortable.
Well, then I ask a question. They go, "Oh, I gotta go and ask ask the chef. I don't know, you know." And I go, "Well, you know."
It drives me up, and I totally agree with you. It drives me up the wall to go to a nice restaurant, and you go to order something, and you hear, "I don't know," or let me check. You know, that shouldn't be. You should yeah. know. You know.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I believe any good server should be able to. They should know all their ingredients. They should have all the food knowledge that they can learn.
Yeah.
So, and that's what makes a good server.
Although one of the questions that I asked that usually the wait staff doesn't know that they do have to go in, if I have a dessert and it's got chocolate in it, and I say, what bulk chocolate does he use? Does the chef use to make this? No one knows the answer offhand. They go, I'll have to ask because I know they're not going to know that.
Exactly.
I like to know that as a chocoholic.
As
and it gives me a sense
yes.
Of the chocolate itself, you know, whether it's Valrhona or, you know, or Hershey's, you know, I mean, it makes
exactly.
a difference. Or Nestle's, you know. Oh,
yeah.
It's Nestle syrup, I think.
Yeah.
Forget about it. I won't have the piece of cake, yeah, you know.
But it is nice, and it is comfortable, and especially when you come into Sensu and you're trying to achieve that full Sensu experience, and you're like, you know what, I'll tell you what, just order for me. And it's just, it's very comforting, you know, as a guest, being able to have all those questions answered. It really is.
Now, one of the things I wanted to also comment on, because when people like say, oh, sure, you know, they'll do a tasting and it, God knows what it's going to cost. And when we talked about like what it came to, And it was something like the whole thing came to about $250. Now, that may sound like a lot when you break it down to four people. And having the sake. When anybody goes, at least I know many times if I've gone for a tasting, when a chef's tasting, and I go for it averages, it's always like about $75 per person to do a tasting. So it's less than that. So, I mean, you know, it's not even that amount of money. So
yeah.
I try to do
a reasonable amount. I do. You know, I really do. And I can get my guests to eat 8 courses and cover about between, depending on if they're having alcohol, between $40 and $60. Yeah. I mean, I could make any budget fit and they still get the full Sensu experience. And not just me, any server at Sensu has that ability to cover that. So.
Which is great because, you know, you can, you can deal. We didn't deal with the budget. Well, actually, I just want to explain what had happened was that we were originally supposed to eat and it doesn't matter what the name of the restaurant. We were supposed to eat at a restaurant, and it came up, I don't know, something, you know, like it didn't sound like okay, yeah, that's nice. We're going to eat there. This was something that tourism was had chosen. And then I said, I really like some other kind of food. And she mentioned it, and she said it recently opened, and then she said she's never been there before. And I said, well, it sounds interesting. I said, come on, let's go for it, you know. What the heck, it sounds, you know, interesting. I'm sure she's told everybody by now. Mm. You know, because I have to thank her for coming up with that, you know.
I'm glad you came in. I'm glad you got the full Sensu experience and enjoyed every bit of it.
Yeah.
You know,
we
have so much to offer. We really do.
Yeah, and it's not, as I said, it's not your average, like, sushi restaurant.
No, that's what we're trying to, the people have labeled us as, Pan-Asian?
Yeah.
We are not a Pan-Asian restaurant. And,
Asian fusion? What do you want
Asian,
to call
it? Yeah, we're not Asian fusion. You know, we have steaks, we have seafood, we have chicken, and then, of course, we have sushi. So, that's one thing I definitely wanted to convey, because everybody's like, oh, no, it's just a sushi restaurant. No, we are not. We have so much to offer, you know, by land, by sea.
Right.
We cover it all.
Yeah, but people also people identify when they say think Japanese food. Oh, we're going to eat raw fish. I said, how much money? You've never been to a Japanese restaurant? I mean, it's not raw fish, you know. Even when people say sushi, sushi isn't raw fish. You have sashimi. Sashimi is raw fish.
Thank you. Exactly.
You know?
Like the lady that was with you, like I said, she could not do the raw seafood. So that's why I picked the Krusty Krab, because it is, it's baked. And that's something she could, you know. Yeah, people really do get the wrong misconception when it comes to our restaurants. So, and along with sushi in general, sushi comes in many different ways. There is some cooked and there is some raw, but just like you were saying, the sashimi and the nigiri, yes, those are the raw items.
Yeah, I had gone to one sushi restaurant. There was a neighborhood restaurant that thought that they would have sushi rolls or maki rolls, you know?
Maki rolls.
And, what happened was that people would start saying, you know what, instead of that, can you use asparagus instead? You know? Well, it got to a point where people were creating their own rolls, naming the rolls, saying what's in the rolls, and then you'd see and it was on the walls. So
wow.
There was at least 500 different maki rolls. Because, you know, people were creating all kinds of things. Oh, yeah, put in some, you know, put chicken in this, tempura chicken in the roll. I mean, it was, you know, so it kind of like, you know, reminds me of that, because what happens is there aren't any rolls that are, say, very typical of, like, you know, that you're going to your average Japanese restaurant and they have, you know, the typical this or that. One thing I hate is when people are eating California rolls.
We carry a California roll. California's rolls are good.
That's a cop out.
Not everybody is, you know, likes to be exotic, but California rolls are great. But our sushi chefs, they see it as a work of art. You know, they take great pride in making their rolls. Great pride in it.
Yeah. Definitely. No, I understand. By the way, I'm very curious. I didn't even look on the menu. You do serve California rolls, right?
We do serve California rolls.
Do you use the make-believe, I call it make-believe crab?
We use the real crab.
Do you use real crab?
Yes, we use the real crab.
Oh, okay. That's what should be. You know, that's why I say the cop-out is the California roll, because it's like, you know, when you're getting those, it's like nothing in it that's really for real, you know. But if you're at least using real crab, at least okay. That's fine, you know.
We do use the real crab. So we go all the way.
Okay, that's the way to do it. I'm so glad. Yeah, I know I have to return. I have to make a list of what didn't I visit while I was there.
There's some things that I definitely want you to try this time when you come in for your next visit. Oh, I want you to try the black cod miso. Oh, I'm telling you, Merle, it will literally melt in your mouth.
Literally, it will melt.
Oh my gosh, it's a white mild fish, and it is cooked in like a yuzu and a butter sauce, and it is just simply to die for. Oh, I mean, you just touch it with your fork, and it just falls apart.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go on to another topic. I got another caller calling in. Heather, I appreciate that you called in and I hope whoever's, you know, when this is archived, and please wear a bib before you listen.
Exactly.
That's a warning. Yeah. Okay, Heather. Yes, I shall return at some point. I like being in Indianapolis, and I'd like to, you know, come here and spend a little more time and get to some other places as well. So I appreciate that you called in and made us all drool a little.
Well, so. I thank you as Sensu thanks you as well. We do.
Okay.
And definitely we will be waiting on your return.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, and have a great
You're
evening.
Very welcome. You too, Merle. Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, all right. We're going to continue on food, aren't we? Yeah, you're on the air. Hi.
Merle.
Yeah.
I'm on the air.
Yeah. Now that we talked about food, we're going to continue talking about food again. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Okay. Oh, Gad, introduce yourself to my audience. Gad.
I am Dan Dunville, chef of Meridian Restaurant in Indianapolis.
I just went through talking about all this food at Sensu, you know, and she's describing everything we ate, and which is at one point that's what you're going to do. But first, let's just get to talk a little bit about the restaurant itself, Meridian on Meridian.
Well, we've been open. This is our fourth year. Still relatively young. We do lunch and dinner 6 days a week, specializing in contemporary American comfort food.
Mm-hmm. The building itself, it's a former, what was it before? A log cabin, a house, or?
Well, yeah, both. It's 140-some years old. It's first a residence for, and I'm unsure exactly of all the timeline, but roughly 40 or 50 years as a residence. And as you said, it is it's a log cabin structure, two-story, pretty good size. And then somewhere along the line in the 20s or 30s, it started becoming restaurants. And I believe we're the fourth or fifth one. And you know, we did a great deal of overhaul and remodel, did two directions of expansion, and basically about doubled the size of the seating capacity of the previous restaurant that was here.
Now, when you get, just to get in line, as an executive chef, you get hired at a restaurant, did they say to you, here's kind of like the food, like here are the menu items we want, or did they say, you know, Dan, go to it, make up a whole thing, and, you know, for us?
They did the latter. You know, every scenario is different, and I've walked into different places, and but this particular scenario with Lux Restaurants and Rick Lux, and he had approached me, and you know, pretty much gave me free rein to you know, create the menu and the kitchen to execute, and it's all mine and my sous chefs. I've been working with the same guys for a few years now, and they have the same passion I do, and love the establishment, and know what the goal is here, and the style that we've kind of created here at Meridian.
And what kind of style? How would you describe the cuisine, so to speak?
Yeah, I call it Hoosier haute cuisine. I think it's just you know, well presented and well flavored comfort food, or twists on old classics.
Yeah, so it's like, I guess it's, if you're going to give it American food, continental?
Yeah, it's very much American,
kind of
American regional.
American, okay. That's how I would see it, you know, but not boring at all.
No, thank you.
Not at all. Well, let's get into the wonderful menu to talk about what we ate. Wait, let me get a napkin because I've been drooling from the last one. Okay, wait, warning. This is another one that's going to make you drool. Please, don't drool on the computer. Okay, go ahead.
Let me refresh my memory on the appetizers here.
Well, we first started out the soup.
Oh, the smoked corn puree. Yeah, that's something that I mean, if we've gained notoriety, or the one thing that people recognize us by, that's our signature, is the smoked corn puree. We smoked corn on the cob with apple and cherry woods. It's taken off the cob husks and everything, cobs and kernels rather, cooked with the mirepoix and stock, and cooked down for a couple hours, and pureed, add a touch of cream, and that's it. It's it's a pretty basic soup, but it's just loaded with flavor, and we garnish that with potatoes and red bell pepper and smoked bacon.
Now, I'm just curious, is this something, did you create this, or did you, like, create it, meaning, I think I'm going to experiment with soup today, and, you know, in the kitchen, and then said, let's try this, let's see how this goes, and then you said, I like the way this all melds, and we're going to, you know, that's it.
Well, one of my favorites.
As opposed to your grandmother gave you the recipe, you mean?
Well, it kind of comes from one and the same. Well, I'm a fan of pureed soups.
Okay.
I like a silky smooth texture that's been strained a couple times. But one of my all-time favorites is corn chowder. So you start with your basic corn chowder idea, and you're thinking, what can I do to kind of make this my own or put my eye twist on it, and cut down the potatoes, puree the daylights out of it, strain it, put a little smoke on there, and that's basically what you have. And it's called corn chowder 100 times a day, but there's nothing chowder about it. I think it's just most people, you know, when they think corn, they're thinking corn chowder for soup.
Right.
Not a puree. So really just, you know, being a Hoosier kid and loving corn chowder, and how can I twist this into something that I really haven't seen before. I mean, I'm not the first one to make a corn soup, but I hadn't seen a smoked corn soup, so you know, I enjoy barbecue and smoke and all that good stuff.
Certainly
so.
Came after.
Yeah.
So now appetizers, I'm trying to remember. I know one of them was wasn't it one with the beef, the
Korean barbecue.
Jarin?
Yeah. The kind of my take on a bulgogi, which is a classic Korean beef dish, short rib sliced really thin, heavily marinated, and you know, in the marinade there's brown sugar and soy and ginger, garlic, but the sugar helps the beef caramelize a little bit on the grill, and we serve that with marinated and dressed cabbage, you know, fresh herbs in there. I think the mint and cilantro really, really kind of give that dish a pop. There's a slight bit of heat on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
What else? You had the charcuterie plate. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to test that in particular because of some of the things that you make right on the premises. That's what it was. And which were the things that you
the pate, the duck pate, the liver pate, and the duck prosciutto.
Oh, okay, right.
We make those. I mean, the garnishes as well, but the other cured meats. That plate sort of rotates whatever we have, or there's things that come and go, and you know, there could be bresaola, there's prosciutto di Parma, soppressata, mortadella, deviled eggs, pickled vegetables.
All right. Now, there was another appetizer.
Did you have the Oysters Rockefeller?
The what? Oh, yes, that's right. Oh, tell us about that. That's your take on it. Wow.
Yeah, again, that's just something that I loved and thought, how can we do this? And one of my favorite New Orleans appetizers are fried oysters and spicy sauce. And I love the Rockefeller, so I, you know, kind of married the two. I did chicken fried oysters and sort of an inverted Rockefeller. I put the fried oyster on top of a bed of creamy cheesy spinach, and then the bacon on top of the oyster, and a little bit of spicy sweet chili sauce and hollandaise garnished on the plate. So I, you know, kind of get the best of both.
And you were telling me you use Blue Point.
I do, yes.
Mm, which is good. I love Blue Point oysters.
Yeah, they seem to not really give up too much of their size when they're fried, and you know, hold together.
Oh, that's good. Was there another appetizer?
Gnocchi. You did the potato gnocchi.
Oh yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that was one of the others. Yeah, tell us about that one.
You know, it's house-made potato gnocchi. You know, on the lighter side, I'm a huge fan of perfect gnocchi that haven't been overworked and are not chewy or gummy. Should be nice and light. And I mean, my take is to really just let the potatoes show. They're not sauced. You know, they're sautéed with a little bit of butter and oil, fennel, and sage. So I think you get a lot of good earthy flavors, you know, with the sage and the sweet potatoes and the oyster mushrooms, crunch from the pumpkin seeds, and then the gnocchi with a nice golden brown crunch on the outside and real soft on the inside.
That was so good. Okay, then we get into the entrees. Well, I think we chose, I wanted to make sure, oh, you had a special on them. You had skate.
We did skate.
Yes.
Soft shell crabs.
I wanted somebody to taste what skate was, because it's not, you know, it's not a... You know, describe, so we could describe what skate is.
Skate wing, it comes from a ray. It's a venomless ray. It's a cartilaginous animal. There's no bones. And you're really just taking the muscle meat right off the side of the animal there and skin it. Skate, it is very unique. It has a unique flavor and appearance. The fibers, it almost has like a giant corduroy-like appearance. You would think that somebody cut that. People that are not familiar think that we, you know, actually cut the lines in there and give it the fiber look that it has.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I like to. It has a little bit of sweetness. It's not very fishy at all. And for something that lives on the bottom, it's has that good sweetness and almost scallop-like.
Yeah, I tell people it's a cross between, you're thinking, a scallop and with a sort of consistency of crab meat.
Yeah. I mean, it should be, it's very delicate. You know, we saute it. It's lightly dusted and seasoned flour and then sauteed. Cooks very quickly, you know, and when done perfect, it's really, really tender. It's delicate. We serve that with herb roasted root vegetables, fingerling potatoes, and a Riesling mustard sauce. We make with Riesling and grain mustard, Dijon mustard, handful of butter.
Yeah. Then there was the soft shell crabs.
Yeah, we got our first run last week of the soft shells and. Were very well received with crabs and corn, seafood and corn, lobster and corn, sweet and sweet, great combination. You know, they were done in blue cornmeal, corn, and the lemon aioli, a little bit of microgreens.
For those people who've never had it before, you eat the whole thing. Yeah, you don't open it up and try to take out the meat from it. You just cut it and eat the whole thing. It'll have a little bit of a crunch.
Yes.
Tell us. I mean, when it's a soft shell crab, how would you describe to what it is versus a hard shell crab? I mean, is it
well,
in a certain stage?
It's in the molting stage. It's the time of year when blue crabs have molted, and that's why the season is so short. You have to get them before their shells harden again.
Right.
And they just basically, it's a really fresh shell, and when you get them, they're still alive. The ones I got, they pack them on wet straw and newspaper, and even here in landlocked Indiana, that my crabs were really nice and fresh. And then you must prep and dress them and get them ready.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really special treat. You know, you can purchase them frozen all year round, but when you can get them fresh in the springtime, it's a really treat.
Mm. Oh, it certainly is. So it's right now. Is the season on right now? I mean, do
yes,
people...
yeah. Generally, 1st of May, and it can last through June and July. You know,
okay.
It's an early summer treat.
Oh, okay. This I know. In Queens here, like there's a famous restaurant, London Lenny's, down in Queens, and it's like whatever's in season. So I'm sure right now they're pushing the soft shell crabs when it's that it's in season. Did we have a third entree?
Did the chicken go out?
What was the chicken?
Is there a pan roasted chicken with the Parmesan bread pudding? Braised escarole.
The brain is trying to remember what the third one was.
Or scallops. I can't remember either. It's a couple hundred meals ago for me.
I know. Somewhere, of course, if I go into my photographs, whatever it is, I took a picture of it. But the brain, because I remember saying, well, let's order a third thing that's not a fish. You know,
probably
could have been. Oh, yes, it was chicken.
Okay.
Yes, it was chicken because I remember it was there was a little bit of bone in it, and I think it was breast.
It was breast. Oh. It was an airline breast. Yeah, it had the little wing bone, the first joint of the wing bone on there.
Okay.
I think that the accompaniment on that dish kind of really set it apart from any other chicken dish. A savory bread pudding. It has the richness of the Parmesan.
Oh, yes, yes.
With the sweetness and the acidity from the tomato jam, it's a really, really great bite. Big fan of the pudding and tomato jam combination. And then you have the fennel braised escarole with the thyme jus sauce as well.
Is that what I know there was the mac and cheese.
Oh yeah, you
do buy
the mac and cheese.
I understand it's like you use like five different cheeses in it.
Yeah, it's very rich. Let's see what's in there. There's Parmesan, white cheddar. A lot of richness comes from the brie. Touch of cream cheese.
Oh, that's what makes it creamy. I was going to say, like, what gives it that creaminess. So you have some soft cheeses as well as hard or semi-hard.
Yes.
Okay. And well, so then there was also, no, it wasn't spinach. What was the?
The creamed kale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Another great one. I'm a big fan of cream spinach, and I think kale's really making a strong comeback. It's so good for you, loaded with vitamins and sturdy green, and we treat it just like you would a spinach. It's blanched, wrung out, chopped up, seasoned, and mixed with the bechamel and cheese mix.
Mm.
And you'd think you're eating spinach, and you know, a lot of people hear kale and kind of want to go the other way, but I think it's a great little side dish.
When done right, it's fine. Kale is kale's not as bad as I'm trying to think of the other one. What thing you get in the South that's very bitter?
You know, I'm a fan of collard greens.
I like collard greens, but you really got to do a lot to it.
Yes,
so
you do.
So it's not bitter. That's I don't have the patience, so I just don't. I don't buy them, you know. But I think I have to learn how to make kale better because I know it's on the list of what's good for you to eat.
Yeah, and I've seen recently too in retail markets kale chips and a lot of kale stuff popping up at supermarkets too. So.
Yeah, and then of course I had to indulge in dessert just because I wanted to. And you make your own. Oh, was it ice cream? Because I wanted to taste it. Because you make your own ice cream, right?
Yeah, we make our own sorbets and gelatos here.
That's one of the things I had. I always appreciate when a restaurant is like making their own, you know, because it doesn't have any additives.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little 2-quart maker there, and we're making something about every day.
Mm.
You know, with 3 or 4 sorbets and 2 or 3 gelatos, you know, and just having a small capacity churner there, it's working every day.
And then there's also butterscotch pudding.
Yeah.
Oh, I tried to eat it. That's a big dessert of butterscotch pudding.
It's rich. It is. You know, I'm a big kid at heart and love the pudding, and butterscotch is one of my all time faves. And
it tasted fabulous, and my stomach was like, I can't eat anymore, and it's like, wow. Yeah, it's not a small little thing.
No, it's not.
But it's really good. When you're making butterscotch pudding, what do you actually like? What is butterscotch?
I leave the scotch part out. You know, I think there was some scotch in there, but it's caramel and cream. I start and I make my own caramel, and then you add milk, sugar, eggs, and a touch of vanilla and a thickener.
Butterscotch, they really use scotch?
Yeah, when I was looking and asking around, talking to some of the old school chefs, and it got its name where they were adding scotch to it.
Oh, that I never knew. I just...
I'm taking their word for it.
Oh, okay. That's interesting, though. I always see it as like... basically comes down to sugar, milk, and eggs kind of thing.
Yes.
But when you're caramelizing, caramelizing the sugar is what gives it that taste.
Yes, gives it the color and the taste.
Yeah. What other items on the menu would you like recommend that we didn't have that are, you know, you have any signature dishes that we didn't eat?
I think two of my favorites would be the pork ossobuco, which is the pork hind shank prepared like an ossobuco. Doesn't have the benefit of the larger bone and the marrow, but it is it's a braised dish, slow and low for hours, falls off the bone, you know, and that one's served with the braised red cabbage and spatzel and an apple cider sauce that's mixed with the cooking liquid, the pork shoe. Also a big fan of the duck breast. You know, we have a really good Indiana Peking duck breast with grilled polenta, a garlicky kale, and a red wine and cherry sauce. And there's also a duck rillette on there, so you have the breast, you have the leg and thigh rillette. So you're really getting about half a duck there. You know, the wild boar bolognese is, people love that, and also the scallops are very popular as well.
Now, just so we get to the location of the restaurant is?
We're at 5694 North Meridian Street. So we're just north of downtown. We're between downtown Indianapolis and the north side. We're 6 miles north of downtown.
Okay. Well, that's really great, and I thank you for sharing all this, and I will have this all written up soon.
Great. Well,
articles.
Next time you're in town, you'll have to come back. It was a pleasure having you in for dinner.
I'll be back.
I'll be back again.
I'm getting the invitations, and I'm going to take everybody up on it.
Excellent.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you, Merle.
And telling us about this. And have a great evening.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
Oh, yes. Well, we're not going to do another restaurant. We're about to go to the zoo. But before we go to the zoo, I'm sorry, but I have to. You know, it's time for a commercial. And I apologize for the drawing.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these wonderful brownies at www.brownies.com. Yes, so I got to give them a call. I haven't had any of their brownies lately. Okay. Anyway, well, let's get to, okay. We're off of talking about the food. Now we're going to go on to lovely little animals. Moore, are you on?
Oh, I'm here.
Yes, now that we finished food. tell us about, first of all, introduce yourself to my audience.
My name is Mara Giles, and I am a spokesperson at the Indianapolis Zoo.
Okay. So tell us about what we went on a tour of the zoo, and I'll leave it to you to tell us where, what we did, and what kind of animals we saw.
Sure, we were at the Indianapolis Zoo, which is a world class organization, a world class zoo, and we have a few different areas or biomes that we call them, which are more. We try to make them naturalistic habitats. And so our first stop, which is generally most people's first stop, is the Oceans Building. It's right as you come in the door. And in the Oceans Building, you'll see some various fish and some jellyfish and some stingrays. And then one of my favorites was the Shark Touch Pool. And this is one of the largest, if not the largest, shark touch pool in the nation. And you even got to pet a shark, Merle, right?
Yeah.
And the sharks that we have in there are smooth dogfish sharks. So their mouths are on the bottom, and they can be up to a few feet long. But you can actually reach in and pet these sharks, which is a really neat hands-on experience. But once you make your way through there, you'll see the underwater viewing of our sea lion area, where you can watch them swim underwater. And then the penguins, which is a huge favorite among zoo visitors. We have three different kinds of penguins, and we have two different sides. You walk down the hallway, but the sides are connected, so we actually got to see the penguins swimming below our feet to the other side, too. And you keep walking through there, and then you'll see our polar bear. We have underwater viewing for a polar bear in case she decides to take a dip in the pool. But then you go outside the door, and there's also outdoor viewing of the polar bear in case she decides that she doesn't want to be in the pool that day. And then you just, you know, it's we have so many great things there. We have a forest biome where we have brown bear. We're opening a brand-new tiger exhibit Memorial Day weekend, which will put you really close to the tigers, closer than probably you could get. Well, except, Merle, you've been in Africa, so you probably got
close.
Yeah. Well, this is the next best thing. If you're in Indianapolis, you know, as close as you're going to get to a tiger there. But
with something in between you and the tiger.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
definitely. Because all the animals in Indianapolis are wild animals. So the tigers, we actually are building this new thing where only about, I want to say about an inch and a half of glass will separate you from these tigers. And when you get up close, they're just so magnificent to see up close, as I'm sure you know. But they're really amazing. And we have some red pandas and the white-handed gibbons, which I love because they sing in the morning. And that's always fun to hear. And then we have a deserts area where we have various tortoises and iguanas. Meerkats live there. And then our plains area.
Oh, the meerkats are so cute.
Oh, I know. Aren't they fun? I love to watch them in the morning because the keepers will put out crickets, and they'll bury crickets in their area. And you can see the meerkats digging up the crickets, which is a lot of fun. They're pretty active. Then we have our plains area, which is very popular because that's where you're going to see a lot of big mammals, a lot of your African animals, your giraffes, your zebras, your wildebeest, your elephants, your rhinos, your cheetahs. We have a cheetah exhibit that was just opened last year, which also is another one of those where you can get really close to the cheetahs. Not too close, though. We don't want you to get too close.
Yeah, right.
But we have some really, really great things. We do with dolphin. We have the world's only 360-degree underwater dolphin dome. So you can actually go in the dome, which we did, and saw some dolphins swimming around us and above us. And that's always fun. We also have a dolphin show that we do daily so people can see some of the behaviors that the dolphins do and find out more about those animals in particular, and then even how to help save them and protect them in the wild, which is our main mission. You know, we are a nonprofit organization. We are the largest nonprofit that does not receive any tax support. So we are really focused on our mission of animal conservation. So what we want people to take away is, yeah, animals are really awesome, but also they're so amazing and so important to our natural world that we need to protect them.
Yeah. Now, do you do any, like, they call, I don't mean VIP tours, like your backstage kind of things?
Yeah, we refer to them as behind the scenes, and we offer a lot of different, what we call experiences, where you can get behind the scenes to see different animals. A couple of our special experiences are things like our dolphin in water adventure, where you actually can get in the water with one of our trainers and our dolphins. And we are the only place in the Midwest where you can do that, where you can get in the water with a dolphin. And a lot of people really love it. It's a really neat experience. I haven't done it yet, but I've seen it so many times that I get excited every time. Because even though I'm not in the water, I'm still close. And it's just, the dolphins are just so amazing. But we also offer art adventures. We have some very talented animals. Our elephants paint and our sea lions paint. Yes, they're painters.
You know, I didn't know. I have to ask you. I wish I would have known. Can you send me a piece of art that from an animal?
Yes.
What I want to do and I want to take a photo of it and include it in the articles, et cetera, because I want to show what that kind of looks. What do you have doing paint art? Just the elephant?
The elephant is probably the most common because the elephant art adventure is available most of the year. But we also have sea lions that paint, and our penguins paint. with their feet, of course. They kind of walk through the paint and then walk on the canvas. And then I have seen a meerkat painting. I haven't seen them do it, but I've seen the painting of the meerkat. They just kind of dip their claws in there and just scratch it and have at it. And we have a couple other animals that paint. But it's really neat because it's enrichment for the animals because they get to do something different. And it's enrichment, of course, for humans because it's something that you would never think of that animals can do. And it's a great takeaway, great keepsake if you come to the zoo, and it's a great experience.
Now, when they do that, they, I mean, like, they're having paint on there. I mean, it's not like you're grabbing a paintbrush, right?
Well, now, actually, it depends on the animal because the elephants, they use their trunk. They actually grab a paintbrush, and then the keeper will hold the palette of paint, and the elephant will use their brush and get the paint off the palette and then paint on a canvas that's on an eagle.
Right.
Much like we would, but maybe a little more sloppy. They don't do any portraits or anything like that.
Yeah, right.
But and then the sea lions actually, I believe, take brushes. I want to say they take the brushes in their mouth also and paint that way. And then the penguins, they just walk through the paint. They don't use a brush. They use their feet. And the meerkats kind of dip their feet into the paint as well. So there are a couple of animals that actually use brushes. You're probably not going to see any Mona Lisas, but they're still amazing artwork.
Well, I guess the question I have is like they're you know dipping the feet or whatever in paint. Is it a paint like you know that they're gonna like? I can't imagine. It's like if I did that with my cat would then try to lick it off its feet. You know that was something I'd be afraid of, but. Or is it a certain type of paint, or, I mean, do they know that it's like, you know, I'm dipping into paint and, you know, don't clean my feet, or you see them do it and, a trainer says, okay, you know, get into the water now.
Well, it is a very safe, non-toxic paint, and it does, you know, we rinse off the penguin. They just put it on their feet, and actually they just walk through it however the penguin wants to. You know, when we do enrichment things like this, we always make sure if the animal doesn't want to do it, we're not going to do it. And you can't really force an animal to do anything they don't want to do. They're just like people. If they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it. But the penguins, you know, we rinse their feet off when they're done, have them walk through some water, and it just rinses right off. So everything is very safe. I have not seen any of the animals try to, you know, lick their paws or anything like that. So yeah, we do take precautions for that.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I never heard that of meerkats doing that. But you know, I mean, when I see them, I think of that the program that they had on TV, the whole series on the. Did you ever watch that series, by the way?
Yeah, the Meerkat Manor, and actually that series helped the meerkats become really popular, especially at our zoo. So a lot of people recognize the meerkats now because of that show. So there are a lot of great shows out there on various, you know, animal networks, National Geographic, Animal Planet, things like that, that are introducing people to animals. So you're getting education before you even get into the zoo, which is wonderful for us because we're trying to really connect people with these animals and understand, you know, what these animals are like and that a lot of them really are in danger.
Hmm. Yeah, and unfortunately, people, you know, think that they should be of other uses.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, good examples, if you go on behind-the-scenes tours at our zoo, you will hear the keepers. They're very knowledgeable, not just about our animals specifically and about the species that they take care of, but also about the issues facing these animals in the wild. You'll hear, for example, our rhino keepers talking about how though the rhinos don't have any what we would call natural predators that attack them, that there are humans who will slaughter a rhino for its horn. And there are a lot of things like that that just are really endangering these animals. It's very tragic. And so we're trying to educate people about that because it's one of those things that, you know, people don't realize. You know, rhinos, their horns, it's interesting because their horns are made out of the same materials as our fingernails. And they're not. It's not that they're valuable like ivory would be for animals. They're valuable in a way where people are people think that, you know, in Africa they might say, oh, well, the rhino horn cures cancer. But that would be the same if I said biting your fingernails will cure your cancer. It's,
yeah,
the chances,
right,
of it happening are really, really probably not going to happen. But people don't know that, and they want to believe anything, so they actually kill these animals for this. So it's really tragic that, you know, there are a lot of things, just like elephants. Elephants in the wild, they get hunted because of their ivory, because it's valuable. And that's happening to a lot of animals all over the world.
Oh, let me ask you a question in terms of with elephants and in terms of the tusks. I mean, is there some, in other words, do the tusks ever shed? Do the tusks have, is there a way to be able to get the ivory without killing the animal? Is there something that can, you know, I'm just curious. I mean, there are, you know, animals that, you know, shed things or whatever.
Right, yeah. An elephant's tusk, they actually grow. They constantly grow. So, like, our elephants, for example, if they get too long, they'll hurt themselves. So we do have to trim down their tusks every once in a while.
Okay.
It's not every day. We don't cut them very short, but just, you know, it's like trimming your fingernails. And you want to make sure that you don't hurt yourself. So we do that. There, you can, you know, we'll say shave down an elephant's tusk. So there are things you can do, but there's also something out there, and I think, I'm trying to think of what it's called. I believe it's a tigua, and it's actually, I think it's a nut. And when you break it open, it looks, and let it harden, it looks just like ivory. So a lot of people, we're trying to inform people that if you need ivory for your jewelry or for statues or for whatever it is you use ivory
for. Or for piano.
Exactly. Stop using the ivory and use this tigua nut because it's a plant and it will grow back and it's just as beautiful. It has the same weight. I mean, a lot of people probably, you know, sell it as ivory. You know, and a lot of people who buy it may not even know that it comes from this plant. But
really?
It's one of the things that this is a sustainable substitution. So we're trying to educate people about things like that as well.
Do you have that plant available there for people to see?
We don't have it at the Indianapolis Zoo yet. Hopefully, you know, maybe in the future we might get some more things like that available. But there are places online. Our education department, for example, uses it
right.
a lot when they do education things in classrooms. And they usually get their sources online. So all you have to do is Google it, and you can certainly buy these tigua. I think they're nuts. Like, I can't quite remember, but you can buy a bag of them, let's say, online.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to Google it just to see kind of what it looks like, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't have to kill an animal.
Right.
I could... You know, there's killing an animal because to eat.
Yes.
You know, but there's killing an animal just because you want a part of the animal, and that's the part
mm-hmm.
that's totally ridiculous. Well,
yeah,
anyway.
And there are real problems facing these animals, and it's not just about something that humans can gain from the animals, you know, but whether it's ivory or whether it's meat. But like the cheetahs, for example, we opened a big new cheetah exhibit last year, and we worked with Lori Marker, who's the founder of the Cheetah Conservation Fund in Africa, and she helped us design our exhibit so it would be suitable for the cheetahs, and she helped us with a lot of our educational components. So what we've done is we've brought in some dogs. I know this sounds kind of silly, but these are a specific breed of dogs. They're called Kangal Shepherd dogs, and they're very large dogs. But what they're used for is in Africa, now there are only about 10,000 cheetahs left in the wild. Not very many, because they don't really breed that well. But in the wild, they're being killed, not because people want a cheetah tail or anything like that, but because they are taking livestock from farmers in Africa. And the farmers need their livestock to live, but the cheetahs want the livestock because it's easy pickings. They just have to go run in and get it. So what Dr. Lori Marker is doing is she is providing farmers with these Kangal Shepherd dogs who bark loud enough to scare the cheetah away. So the farmers don't have to set traps that will catch and kill the cheetahs. The farmers don't have to shoot the cheetahs because they're threatening their livelihood. So what you have is these dogs bark really loud because the cheetahs, if there's a little bit of difficulty in getting their prey, they'll go somewhere else. they're kind of like me in that respect, I think. If, you know, if there's a big line at one grocery store, I might just leave and go to the store that's across the street.
Right. Yeah.
So I can understand the cheetah. You know, if there is possible danger, you know, they're fast and they're capable and they can get their food somewhere else.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you have a thing with a race, don't you? That you can race a cheetah there.
Yes, we do. And it's actually voiced by Tony Stewart, a NASCAR driver, who the Tony Stewart Foundation helped us put in this activity. It's called Race a Cheetah. And for 50 cents, you can run against a simulated light display of how fast a cheetah would go. And you can see if you can beat the cheetah, which I don't think anyone has yet, because they can get up to 70 miles an hour in about 3 seconds. But the cheetahs don't necessarily run with you, but we did see some. I think that day you were out, that were pretty interested, and they were kind of running around. So it's a lot of fun. But the money that you spend to race a cheetah, the 50 cents, goes directly to the Cheetah Conservation Fund in Africa to help protect cheetahs. So when you come and race a cheetah, you are actually personally saving cheetahs.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. And also, see how fast you can run.
That's right.
Now you don't have I mean other than being able to pet the sharks, is there any other animals that people have access to, a feeding or anything like that?
We're really working on trying to connect people a little bit more with a lot of our animals. We have a giraffe feed. It's daily in the summertime, but then in the spring I think it's just on the weekends. But you can actually feed a giraffe a sweet potato. And when we open our new tiger exhibit, you are going to be able to not feed the tigers, of course, but you're going to see demonstrations of our keepers actually feeding the tigers. So there are a lot of opportunities like that. You can watch our penguin keepers feed the penguins at various times of the day. And, you know, a lot of our exhibits, we're just trying to get people close up to the animals. Hopefully we'll add a lot more interactive things, because we know at the Indianapolis Zoo that is important to connect people with these animals. You know, sometimes it's not enough just to see them. You have to know about their history. You have to know what they're fighting and facing in the wild. And you have to build a connection. And we know that for a lot of us, building a connection means getting a hands-on experience. So we are really working to try and bring hands-on experiences to several of our exhibits.
Now, of the, I'm trying to think of the word for things that have to, in the monkey family, there's the terminology of things in the monkey family. Of them, who are the most fun to watch?
Well, we have a couple species of primates right now. We have baboons.
That's the one.
Which are the ones I think you're thinking of, yes. We have a very large baboon family, and one of them just had a baby. So they're a lot of fun to watch. And you saw them kind of – it's funny because when a baboon has a baby, everyone gathers around the baby. And it's kind of like if you're it's kind of like humans, where everyone wants to hold the baby. So all the baboons are trying to grab the baby. You know, the mother is screaming at them,
yes,
get away.
So
you can't
fun.
Hold the baby right now. So
that
they're
was
a lot
funny,
of fun to
yeah.
Watch. Yeah, they're
I remember that, you know, about with the baby. Yeah, that was. Mm-hmm. Then there was something. What's the thing regarding the turtle? The thing about crossing a bridge or something.
Yes, with the lemurs, because lemurs are actually part of
the lemurs. Okay,
too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have three species of lemurs. We have red ruff lemurs, we have blue-eyed black lemurs, and we have what's most popular, the ring-tailed lemurs. And right now, the ring-tailed lemurs are on their very own little island. And to go in at night, there's a narrow rock bridge that leads to their door to go inside. So what will happen is we have a lot of turtles who live in the pond that surrounds this lemur island. And the turtles will go and they will sit on that little rock bridge. And it's kind of narrow. So the lemurs, if they see the turtles sitting on that bridge, they will not go inside or come outside, whichever side of the bridge they're on. They won't do it. So actually at night we have to have a keeper go out to the bridge and set the turtles in the water so the lemurs will cross. I don't know if they're afraid of them or if they just think they're strange. I'm not sure, but I've also seen lemurs try to jump over the turtles. So I think sometimes they look at it as a game, and they try to leap across as many turtles. It's kind of like how many barrels could you jump over is kind of what it seems like to me.
Yeah. Oh. That whole thing was interesting. I got to see it from one side. I probably should have gone on to the other side and got to where all the people were staring at them. So it's so. And how long has the zoo been around there?
Well, the zoo. We opened originally in the '60s in a different location. And then it was east of downtown. So now we're right downtown. We're in White River State Park, which is a large state park. We're really lucky to have this beautiful green space right downtown. And we're there with a lot of other attractions, like the NCAA Hall of Champions and the Idle Jorg Museum and the Indiana State Museum and the IMAX Theater and Victory Field. So a lot of these places in White River State Park. So it's really nice that they're all kind of connected. But we just moved there a little over 20 years ago. It's probably been, 22, 23 years that we've been in this new location. We're really lucky to be downtown.
And has it expanded since the zoo was there? And I'll say, now we got a little more land, and let's say this, or just like we're going to do with the land that we have, you know, with the expansion.
Right. Well, at the original location, we didn't have as many large animals because there wasn't enough land. So we moved. We had a lot more land so we could have a lot more room for these animals. So we did expand and grow, and we're able now to even focus more on our mission, whereas before it was, in the '60s originally, zoos pop up as kind of an entertainment value, but we are totally focused on our mission now of animal conservation, and part of that is because we're nonprofit.
Yeah, and just so we get the cost, the hours, what's the logistics on that in the zoo?
The Indianapolis Zoo is open year round. We are closed on just a few days. We're closed Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. And then in January and February, because it's colder and snowy, we're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays. But every other day, you can come to the Indianapolis Zoo. And if you come in November, December, January, February, March, the admission is cheaper, which is nice. So our admission right now for the summertime, $15.25 for adults, $10.25 for children and seniors. And we offer a lot of discounts, like to military veterans, things like that. And, of course, our membership is a great value. But then in the winter and early spring, admission is discounted. So it's, probably $5, $6 cheaper to come at that time. And we also offer Community Tuesdays. So the first Tuesday of each month, admission is only $8 a person. So we try to offer as many opportunities as we can to get people at all income levels to come to the zoo and get connected with these animals.
Oh, that's really great. They have a whole family thing, like if you live in the area and you get like one price and, bring the entire family kind of thing, and as every day, if you want to go every day,
We offer a lot of different types of memberships. We have memberships for, just individuals and guests, because there are a lot of adults, like us who like to go to the zoo. We also, we are triple accredited, and we're one of the few places in the country that's triple accredited as a zoo and an aquarium and a botanical garden. So there is something for everyone, really. We have over 3 acres of gardens, including a conservatory. So, even if you just like plants, of course, you can come and visit our gardens area and the plants all over grounds, because our horticulture staff plants native things to the various biomes all over the grounds. So there are a lot of membership levels where if you're just adults or if you're a family of four or if you're grandparents, you know, it's a great opportunity. It's a lot cheaper. So if you come to the zoo twice a year, it pays for itself.
Now, I'm curious about something. Like when you have a discount for seniors, what are they actually presenting? I'm just curious.
Well, the senior discount is just seniors ages 62 and up. So, you know, if you say you're a senior, we probably won't question you. Just because it's not very polite to ask a woman her age, is it?
The reason I'm asking is because I'm turning 62 and I already applied for the Social Security benefits. I'm going, take it now. I ain't waiting for 4 years. And it's not that I'm going to be 65, you know, so it's like,
right.
And so I was just kind of curious is when, you know, it just occurred to me that, you know, when you have all these like senior discounts, what,
uh-huh.
you know, what one is actually presenting, you know.
We say ages 62 and over count as seniors for the senior zoo admission rate. Chances are, you know, we're probably not going to card you.
Okay.
But, you know, if there came to be some kind of strange circumstance where, you know, maybe for you, Merle, because you look young for your age, they might say, I'm sorry, ma'am, we need to see your ID.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know. I can understand that. But I was just kind of curious in general, like when they have things and it's, you know, a senior discount, you know, what someone is actually presenting. I mean, like, I know that, for instance, when it comes to, like, transportation, you have to apply and you get a, you know, special card or something, you know.
Right. No, at the zoo and probably at a lot of other places, it's 62 and over. We're going to take your word on it. If you're coming to the zoo and you want to learn about animals, you know, we're not going to question your motives, you know, necessarily on trying to get a cheaper admission. So,
okay.
but I could see at other places, you know, if you want to go to somewhere and get a coffee and you want the senior discount, they might, you know, I don't know if they ask for your driver's license, but that I would think just like, you know, finding out anyone's age, you know, depending on things that they're buying, you would look at their driver's license, I would say, or a state ID.
Yeah. No, I kind of wonder because I didn't ask them, let's say, when I just finished applying, like, am I getting... Is there something I'm going to get that I'm, you know, so, okay, I'm retired.
Like, do you get an official senior card? An official
yeah, that's
senior badge?
You know, like the...
I'm a
you know, like
Social Security button or something.
Yeah, like, you know, when you turn 50, it's AARP.
That's right,
you show
yeah.
Show them you have an AARP card, they say, okay, at least we know you're 50 years old. You know?
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah. But now it's a double thing. Now there's certain benefits you can't get until you're 65.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like now they've decided 62, you know, is something, you know, something different. And I went, okay, well, I'm going to take advantage of it.
That's
know?
Right. And we're just going to take your word on it. You know, we're
oh,
nonprofit,
okay.
So we're going to take your word for it.
Oh, okay. But it's really, have you ever been... Have you traveled to New York?
Yes, I have. I have some friends out there, actually.
So have you been to the Bronx Zoo?
You know, I haven't, because when I went to New York, it was before I'd worked at the zoo, and I just wasn't that interested in traveling to different types of zoos, but now, of course, I am, because I'm very, very educated about these animals, and that is the first step. You know, it's not really a lot about entertainment, a little bit, but... It's also about being educated. And so now I would definitely go to the Bronx Zoo the next time I'm in New York.
It'll be interesting to see someone coming to New York because what happens is that you have the zoo, like Central Park in Manhattan has a zoo. In Queens and one of the parks is the Queens Zoo that's there. I'm not sure about Staten Island, but it's like, but if you really want to see the zoo, you know,
yeah.
It's in the Bronx. That's where you're going to see, like, you know, huge amount of animals. It's like the same thing in terms of, like, botanical gardens, that
mm-hmm.
most of the boroughs here have a botanical garden. But if you want to see, like, the big one,
right.
it's across the way from the Bronx Zoo.
Yeah.
So you can kill a couple of days between those two places and see, and you know, and see the best. But anyway, well, I appreciate that you're calling, you know, calling in and sharing this with us. And when I get back out there, maybe I'll do another zoo visit, because I like
yeah.
to watch the antics of the animals.
And our animals have a lot of personality, as you learned. So they're a lot of fun to watch. And we generally open something new every year around Memorial Day weekend. We try to keep things fresh, keep people coming back, so that we can help teach them about animal conservation. So we'd love to have you back. I'm glad that you came out.
Yes, and I'll give you a call later about so I can give you my address, because I
okay.
like that I'd love to have a that would be interesting having a artwork you know to kind of to show people, you know, like
yeah
believe it or not, this is done by a, you know, that kind of a thing.
That's right. Yeah, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay, great. Okay, yeah, well, Maura, have a great evening. And again, I appreciate, you know, you sharing all the information with us. And, if you want, you can link this.
Yeah.
You can link the radio show to your website so people can hear
okay.
all of this. And thanks for taking us around, too.
Oh, my pleasure. I hope you come back soon.
Yep, I will. Have a
okay.
great evening.
All right, you
talk
too.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Yes, well, I'm waiting for our segue guy to call in, but in the meantime, it's time for a piece of music. I'm going to play some music, and I need to take a break from talking anyway.
We start looking. Another short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasy, listening for the new toll lies with supreme visions of lonely tunes. Somewhere in front of our lives, I fashion my future.
got our caller calling in. And okay, you are on the air, Bob.
Hello, Merle. How are you?
Did I give you the number? Maybe I forgot. Did I forget?
I hadn't received it, so I apologize.
Okay. You know, because I was just, I have the capacity to dial out, and but the number I have from you doesn't look like the same number you're calling in on. So, but okay.
Well, it's great that we were able to connect.
Okay, I'm so glad. Oh, well, anyway, yeah, Bob, just to introduce yourself to my audience, tell them.
Yes, my name is Bob Witt, and I am Executive Director of White River State Park in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay, and you do the Segway tours?
We do. We have Segway tours that are they've been very, very popular. I think this is our fourth year that we'll be doing them. Basically, it is a full lesson for each individual on the tour, and these are small, very personal tours, a maximum of six people plus a guide. So it's a very personal tour through White River State Park. You become very comfortable on these machines. They're actually very intuitive, and it's actually a great way to get to see all that we have to offer here at the park. It's a good speed. It's easy to stop to take things in, and it's just been very, very popular.
So, what is tell us what's at the park?
Well, White River State Park is a very unusual state park. It is the largest urban state park in the United States, and it is it's a cultural park. It's a cultural and sports park. We have the Idle George Museum of Native American Western Art. We have the Indiana State Museum, which is our museum of culture and history and technology. Within that is the IMAX Theater. The national headquarters of the NCAA is here, along with their Hall of Champions Museum, which is a great interactive museum where you can learn about all the sports, but you can also actually play all of them on simulators. We also have the Indianapolis Zoo, which was named the 9th best zoo in the country by Family Circle magazine.
Had on, by the way.
Oh, did you? Outstanding.
Yeah, I just had them on. Yeah, go ahead.
It is such a great, great zoo. They also have White River Gardens, which is our botanical gardens. The Victory Field, which is where the Indianapolis Indians baseball team plays, many times has been named the best minor league ballpark in America. And then we have our the lawn at White River State Park, which is our concert venue, a very small, intimate venue. We've had many, many great performers all the way from Bob Dylan, Sheryl Crow, to some of the newer ones. Like this year, we've got Arcade Fire and the Black Keys and Florence and the Machine, the Decemberists. So wide range. The Avett Brothers are coming later. Wide range of great musical acts there, and we also have a lot of great green spaces where we have big festivals, community gathering places, and we have a beautiful, very serene canal walk as well through the park. So it's about 270 acres right in downtown Indianapolis, so very walkable, and we have about 3.5 million visitors a year here.
That's really great, and it's a very relaxing park, I must say. It's
a place where really you could come with a group of any size, whether it's, you know, a small family on up, and there really will be something of interest to everyone in the group. And it was just great to host you here and get you out on the Segway. And I must say, you are really an old pro on that machine.
Yeah, I guess after doing it for a number of times, And I try to tell people, if you've ridden a bike and if you've driven a car, then you really catch it easier.
Yeah.
You know, because you, it's like because, you know, it's at a point where you start, you're not thinking about it anymore.
Right. And that's
like
when
I'm getting on it, like I'm getting on a bike. I already, okay, I got the way it works. So
sure.
This is what I need to do. The getting off part I haven't mastered yet.
I think you did absolutely fine, and it is a lot of fun.
It's very enjoyable, and I think it's a great way of getting a tour of something, if you don't want to walk.
Yes, and you know, with a park of our size, it would really, if you were going to try and do a thorough tour, for instance, the tour course that we take with the Segways, it would probably take the better part of a day to walk that. On the other hand, if you do it as a Segway tour, you can knock it out in about an hour and a half or so. So it's a lot more easy to fit. It's a lot easier to fit that into the schedule.
Yeah, and by the way, you remember we were discussing about the building that you have there, and you're thinking like, you know, somebody should buy it as a restaurant.
Well, yeah, I think there are a lot of possibilities. It is the Indianapolis Water Company Pump House, which is built in 1870, and that is where our administrative offices are located. That's where my office is. I would hate to give up this great office and location and view and all these things. On the other hand, it is something that could be potentially repurposed, and the public would then be able to really enjoy this beautiful facility.
I spoke with Rick Lux about it.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I did. When I went to Meridian on Meridian, I said, hey, by the way, I got a place you may want to buy.
Well, that's great. I appreciate you. Now, are you going to, if the deal goes down, are you going to want a percentage?
Oh, I didn't even talk of that. I just kind of said, I thought it would be of interest to him because since he has five restaurants, that this would be a great little place because it's not like he has five of the same type of restaurants, you know?
Right.
And so this might be, you know, because one of the comments I made was that in terms of like when people, you know, want to eat something, you either have to go in, you have to go into the building of a, you know, like a museum. or thing like that.
Yeah. Sure.
As opposed to some place where, you know, food is like available and you just go there and, you know.
Yeah.
Because I wonder, like, even for people that, let's say, are just going there, let's say if there's a show, if you're going on the lawn or, you know, and you just want to get up and get something to eat, there's nothing there, is there?
Sure. Right.
I mean,
and,
I
you know,
I don't
it could
know
be
who,
anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be anything from a, you know, kind of, an event space to Tavern on the Green kind of concept.
That's true.
In this location. So, there are a lot of possibilities. But, I think it's something that deserves some very careful consideration. What were some of the highlights of your trip to Indianapolis, Merle?
Oh, my God. There was so much. Well, I did first of all. I love the gondola.
Did you?
I love the gondola. It wasn't as much. It was a highlight only because the guy actually sang, which I've been on a couple of gondolas, one in Florida and in Fort Lauderdale, and one in Long Beach, California. And it was like, you know, there's the, you know, piped in music or the one with that kind of thing, and the other had the portable, you know, player there.
Sure.
With Dean Martin singing, and so it was a pleasure to actually hear a gondola like he sang a cappella, and I had him on the radio last night, and he did a few numbers even on the radio. So that was so cool.
Well, they actually they have good voices, and they are uh, they they sing in very well spoken Italian. So it is a treat, and you know those gondolas are actually imported from Italy. They're the real deal.
Yes, that's that was the other thing that that I was also kind of impressed about. I definitely was impressed about the park. They're having a park with so many attractions available, like right then and there. That was one of the things that did impress me. Some restaurants impressed me too. you just missed, like, I had two different restaurants on, and you know, describing what we ate, you know, and I already warned people, you know, anyone who wants to listen to this, please wear a bib, you know, because.
Well, we do have some fantastic restaurants here. We have some great attractions and amenities. And the other thing that I think a lot of folks, when they come, they're surprised by, A, how walkable it is, and B, how little hassle it is to, you know, if you want to get from point A to point B or find parking or any of those issues. It's a great place to visit because you don't have headaches. You know, there's a lot to do without all of the associated difficulties that you do find in many places.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I did notice about that. I also noticed it was clean.
It is very clean. We have an organization called Indianapolis Downtown Inc., and they work very, very hard to make sure that that all of the streets are very, very clean. That everything is kept up. You almost never see any graffiti, and that's because there are crews that get out there and they clean or sandblast or whatever is necessary. Immediately after anything like that goes up. And what they've found, I think, is that the folks who do that kind of thing, if they see that, you know, the next morning it goes away, then they don't put it up because there's no purpose.
Right. I also, there's an IMAX movie that they have right now that was Born to Be Wild.
Yeah.
You didn't get the chance.
I've seen it a couple times, and it is fabulous. It is a great story.
It was one of the best, not only because of the 3D, but I mean, it was so heartwarming. It was one of the, you know, really, you know, because sometimes an IMAX movie is like, you know, like, oh, this is interesting. You know, it's a,
right.
you know, kind of thing. A 3D one. But this one was like, you know, I can watch it again. It's that kind of movie. I wouldn't mind watching it again. That was.
And you know, the 3D effects are really cool, but the message is what really matters.
Yeah.
And this is a movie with great heart about orphaned elephants and orangutans. And these great organizations that save these animals and raise them and then release them into the wild. And it is spectacular. Of course, we do a lot of collaborative programming throughout the park. And in this case, obviously, the connection is with the Indianapolis Zoo. And it's great when we have folks who, you know, can come and see a film like that and then go and see those animals. So it's great to have all of these organizations that can work together to really make for a very special outing for a family or group.
Sure, I want to ask them if the movie is ever going to come out, you know, on DVD. Not of course in 3D. I don't
right.
think I'll be, but just, you know, because that was just I'd love to see the movie, you know, itself. But I have to tell. I mean, there was definitely a lot to do. I can't even begin to tell the long list I have got in front of me, because, you know, I have Indianapolis enlisted, like, okay, who's, you know, I got to slate people for the radio, and they're really long list. But what I'm going to wind up doing, like, next week, I'm going to have Morgan Greenlee come on and talk about a group of things because I can't
right.
With everybody it'll be too much because aside from there's still the Speedway to talk about
yep.
the Museum of Art the Rhythm Discovery Center the Children's Museum there's really a lot for people to do. It's not people had said to me, you go to Indianapolis, what for? What's there to do? There's nothing there. I said, I don't know. I got a long list in front of, places I'm going to see. And it's really nice. I really appreciated being there, and I've been invited back a number of times. And I'm going to take everybody up on it.
Well, you should. You should. Yeah. And it was great. It was great to have you here. And it we really appreciate you helping us, get the word out because we are still to many folks a surprise and relatively unknown. But there are a lot of great destinations in Indianapolis and. You could easily fill a week long trip with doing things here.
Oh, yeah.
And
easily.
Obviously with the 100th anniversary of the Indianapolis 500 coming up, this is a very, very active month here in Indianapolis.
Between that and next year with the Super Bowl.
Oh yeah, yep. So,
yeah, so
I just actually came from a Super Bowl meeting just a few minutes ago, it's going to be just a very energized city, and we're really looking forward to what the showcase that the Super Bowl will be for us.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to have to cut you off. It's like I see it says 1 minute remaining, so I have to end the show right now. I appreciate you calling in. I guess I thought I had sent you the phone number, but I'm glad that you persisted.
I'm glad we were able to connect.
I'll probably be talking to you again for information regarding when I'm writing the article. So
outstanding.
Okay. I'll talk to Rick Lux again.
Please do.
Okay.
Have
All
a great
right.
weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, I'll be continuing next week with more of Indianapolis and chickens are resting. What can I tell you? Chickens are resting. So everybody have a great day, evening, or whatever it is, and